Hi, I'm Richard, the founder of 10 Adventures, and this is the 10 Adventures podcast. Each week, we talk to real people about real adventures as they explore this incredible planet we all live on.
Welcome to today's episode of the 10 Adventures podcast. Scotland's North Coast 500 is a route that is rapidly growing in popularity, taking you along the stunning northern Scottish coastline. While the route is often driven, it's also gaining popularity for bike touring, with long-distance cyclist Mark Beaumont and the Global Cycling Network YouTube channel doing a great video on how stunning this route is. With us today is Dan Lopresti, who recently completed bike touring this route over 10 days, and I'm eager to hear about this exciting trip. Hi, Dan. How's it going?
Oh, hi there. Hi, Richard. Nice to see you.
So I'm excited to talk to you because this is a bike tour I've actually been eyeing, and it looks incredible. But what drew you to this route?
So basically, I've just casually heard about this route, and it got my curiosity straight away. So just by Googling it, I saw that it was this little universe I wasn't you know, aware of. So it just sounded amazing. I saw a couple of pictures and I just decided I wanted to go. I didn't really want to spoil me. And I watched the GCN video of Mark Beaumont, and he actually made it in 3 days right after when I was back. And it just looked absolutely impressive and impossible. 10 days felt like quite a bit. 3 days is this guy is just a hero for every cyclist or every tourer really, because he's done crazy things. Actually, something very interesting, on my way while I was almost to Durness in the north, a pro cyclist just passed me by, and I later found out that he actually is the man who's got the record. So he's been around the North Coast 500 in that day when he passed me, and he made it in 29 hours. He just made almost 515 miles in just in 29 hours. It was impressive. And he just passed me by and said hello to me. I had no idea who he was.
That does not sound like a fun trip, 29 hours straight for 500 miles.
I don't think he enjoyed that.
Going into this, had you done a lot of bike touring already, or is this one of your first big trips?
This is my first big trip, as intended to be a big trip, because I actually started cycling last year during lockdown. I was back in Italy, my hometown in Palermo in Sicily, and I was doing the lockdown back then, and we were allowed to go to take the bicycle out, you know. So I just started running, you know, going to the same old place but with the bicycle, and I found out that you see everything with new eyes when you ride a bicycle, you know. So after the riding 10 kilometers and thinking, man, maybe I can do even 20 tomorrow and 40 the next day. And in a couple of months, I ended up going around Sicily with the bicycle, and it was almost 800 miles around the island. And with the old bike I had in my garage, it wasn't nothing fancy. I had just my old tent, so I wasn't really prepared. And during that trip, I met a guy that he was coming from France to Sicily. He had like 4,000 kilometers on his back, and he taught me a lot of things. He was like a teacher for me. I wasn't really looking out the best gears or, you know, the best bike. I just wanted to go around my island, the place I was born. I just wanted to cycle all around it. And it turned out an amazing experience. Then I moved to England, and, you know, I wanted to go bigger. And the North Coast 500 sounded like something I really wanted to do. And I just left.
That's an incredible story, just, you know, picking up cycling again during lockdown and, you know, transitioning from, I'm going to go for my first bike ride to, I'm going to cycle around Sicily to, I'm going to do the North Coast 500 all in a year. It seems like a really fast progression. Did it feel like you were rushing as you were doing it, or did it feel real natural that this was just, you know, it was totally easy to do?
It didn't feel very hard. I have to say, I've played football and I run all my life, so it's not something new to me to a physical activity. Something I didn't expect from the bicycle is that you can actually stay on it for hours. And if you know how to stay on that for hours, you can get a totally different kind of feeling, you know. I found out I could ride 40 kilometers a day, and not being that tired, but seeing a lot of really good results. You know, you eat better, you drink a lot of water, and you know, your body is working, you know. And also, I much prefer the bicycle to running or some other sports or team sports. Of course, we weren't allowed anymore, so you know, bicycle has been really such a beautiful thing, really, for my sanity. Lockdown has been hard on everyone, and being able just to go around the same old places but on a bike, it just made me smile. You know, I think everybody on a bike at least once has smiled. I smile every single time I ride my bike, even to go to work. If there is, you know, the hill that goes down and you go a little faster, and it's just, you know, it's like being back, being a kid, you know. When we grow up, you just, you know, the bicycle was the first thing that allowed us as a kid to go a little further, you know. I was like, I'll take the bike, I will go to that place that I would never, you know, imagine to go by feet as a kid because it's way too far. But with the bike, you were allowed to do that. Then you grow up, you got the car, you got the motorcycle, and you don't think about the bike anymore. But the bicycle gives me the possibility of riding 100 kilometers a day and see that beautiful places and being healthy. Why not? I mean, it's also not polluting. And in Scotland, I've been wild camping, and I tried, you know, to leave no traces, as, you know, every good wild camper should do. And it is just amazing. You can see, you're just a guest in this beautiful place, and you're not just passing by and leaving something of your presence. And in such a wild place as is the Highlands, I didn't really expect to be that wild, if I have to be honest. There are some legs of the path, 30, 40 kilometers, where you just cannot see any presence of human, rather than, you know, the road and the signs. Maybe you see that electrical pole, but that's pretty much it. You just see rocks and stones on one side, a little trees on the other, and then lakes all over, and then all the coast is simply beautiful. It's like coming out in a movie, really. It felt amazing.
You mentioned you know, rediscovering biking and feeling like a kid. I've actually said to my wife before the same thing. It's like I feel like I'm a kid, you know, going down a nice curvy hill or just going for a ride and kind of like losing myself just enjoying that. And it's cool. I've never heard anyone else say that, but I think it's probably a really common feeling of it just makes you feel a bit more youthful. But I'm interested in the planning. You said something interesting that you didn't try and like watch too many YouTube videos on the North Coast 500. And I've actually met some people that, you know, they're trying to eschew learning too much about a trip before they go on it because they feel they lose that discovery. So, you know, in the old days, you'd have a book and you'd go to the Himalayas and you'd kind of like, you'd have seen four or five photos, but that's all you had and everything was different. Whereas now there's thousands of YouTube videos. You can almost do the entire trip from home and then there's no discovery. So how much planning did you actually do for this North Coast 500 trip of yours?
Of course, I've been tempted on clicking on the hundreds of video of cycling video of the North Coast 500 because there are plenty out there. I've been reading a lot. Reading is much, much better than, you know, the visual experience because you start to imagine in your own mind something. Maybe you see some pictures, but of course, a picture cannot explain 10 days, 2 weeks of travel, you know. So a pictures are actually nice, gives you an idea. But then watching an entire video of the guy doing step to step, which probably is a wonderful video, an amazing experience, but it will never be the real deal. You have to be aware of very important things as where to get food, where to get water, camping, or the bed and breakfast where you want to stay. That is something that I definitely recommend to do because you might end up not knowing when to stay. And if you're not really familiar with wild camping, you cannot have a very nice experience, you know. I don't have any problem with wild camping, so I was just, you know, going and whatever I felt like. I always try to stop at any shop. There are plenty of shops, of course, but I would bring an extra bottle of water, you know, just in case. There are plenty of lakes and rivers. Of course, it's not the best to drink that water. You might want to boil it. I mean, you're not going to starve to death or die if you're not planning in Scotland. But having an idea, a general idea of the path. And I had a book, which a colleague of mine, was very, very kind. She's from Scotland and she gave me a couple of books, even a map. of Scotland, and that was very nice, you know, checking the map and seeing what you want to see. And in this guide, it was a rough guide to the North Coast 500. It just tells you which are the main attractions. This time, as my second time traveling with a bike touring, I just wanted to go and stop wherever I feel like, taking pictures and, you know, just enjoying being there and not just trying to go from A to B in that day and keeping that speed. And, you know, you might lose so many things. I think something very important when traveling with the bike is the travel itself. It's not the, no, commuting, just commuting. Because if you just commute, you're going to remember how heavy it was that day, how many hills there were that day. You will still remember those, but if you stop time to time and take a picture, eat an apple under a tree, or, you know, just enjoy the shade. I've been blessed with an amazing weather. I just had 10 days of straight sun, almost no rain, which is very, very unlikely to happen in Scotland any other time. I don't know what happened that window of time I've been there. I felt, I just came up, went north. I was expecting a cold weather. The air was definitely chiller than, you know, the West Highland, the West Midlands in England. The sun was simply amazing. I got sunburned, as you can see. I just, you know, I completely, something I didn't pack. Everybody I knew that I was going to Scotland just asked me to, told me to pack, you know, any the rain gear and anything for rain, be prepared. I got with me the lube for my chain. I got the wet for wet conditions, you know. I didn't bring the one for dry condition, and it ended up being wrong because I needed the dry lube because it has been so dry. I just had 10 minutes of rain one evening, and that was it for the whole trip. It was just unbelievable. And I had to buy sunscreen in Northern Scotland.
The only tourist who's ever had to do that. I'm really interested in the wild camping because, you know, what you described, the freedom to not have to get to a certain place. I know in Northern Scotland, there isn't a ton of accommodation, and in kind of the peak summer months, it's actually really hard to get a reservation, and kind of you don't have that ability to be super free. But with wild camping, you do. So what was wild camping like for you in terms of, you know, deciding where to pitch your tent and, you know, carrying all your gear and just that aspect of the trip?
Yes. So basically all the accommodations around were just full, well, all booked. And I had no idea because I just went without booking anything, you know. But every single B&B or accommodation had the no vacancy post outside. It was just, even one night I was very tired. I wanted to sleep in a bed and I didn't find one. So I ended up sleeping in a roulotte of a lady. She had the roulotte in the backyard and she rented to me for one night. It was amazing. But the other nights have been just wild camping, basically. In my mind, I wanted to ride between 80 and 100 kilometers per day, so between 50 and 60 miles a day, in order to make it in around 1 week, just around the evening when it was, you know, time. Just look for a good spot. On the way, there are so many nice spots where you can just stop and go 10 meters from the road. There you are in a beautiful hill on the lake. And I was always trying to look for some rivers or lakes in nearby where I could wash myself or where I could wash, you know, dishes after breakfast, you know, where clean the porridge, what remains of the porridge, and remote places where it's nice. And it's very easy because the Highlands are so remote and so wild that you don't need to hike so much from the main road to find a good spot. You can just, you know, take the left turn in a very little road and you're there, you know, just you found it. And also I've been camping twice on the West Coast. I've been to a camping, which was amazing. I had a rest day, so I ended up staying two nights and I had a nice warm shower. They had a fire in the night. I had a bath. I had a swim in the sea, which was absolutely cold. My legs felt so much better after it because it was a very hard day after passing one of the hardest climb of the UK, the Bealachnaba. The Scottish people will forgive my accent in that. It's basically the Cattle Pass, and it goes up to 600 meters, and there are some bits of it with between 15% and 16% of inclination for 1 kilometer. It has been hard. That was hard with the panniers and everything with you. That's an aspect of the North Coast 500 that if you want to wild camp, you have to bring your stuff with you. There were also some cyclists that were bike packing, you know, with the luggages and the saddlebags, so without panniers, which is a much better way of travel if you want to go fast, if you want to go, you know, a lot, if you want just to stop and, you know, wild camp, make pictures. Some days I ended up riding 40 miles because I just loved it and I was just going so slow. I didn't want to beat any record. I just wanted to enjoy this route because the most beautiful thing of the route, it's the route itself. You have to ride it. You have to go there. You have to make it part of you, because I'm convinced that when you travel with a bicycle, the environment becomes part of you. You live in it. You sleep under its sky. Every single mile of the road gets inside your muscle fibers, you know, the smell, the wind, the rain, the sea, everything in there, you know, you're part of it. This is something that if you travel by airplane, if you travel by car, if you travel by train, maybe a little bit. There was even a guy, he was over 60 years old. He was walking the North Coast 500. He was walking it. I just stopped him and I needed to have a chat with him because I heard the story of this guy walking the North Coast 500 from other cyclists that were telling me their story, like, oh, we met somebody who's walking the North Coast 500, you know. And then I saw this guy, he was pulling with him a little cart with all his food and water, and he was over 60 years old. I forgot his name because we were in the middle of the road, dude. But we had a nice chat and I just congratulated. He was so inspiring. I gave him some chocolate. I gave him gummy bears. I told him, you need energy. Do you have water? You know? And he was so happy that another traveler, I mean, I was a guy with a bicycle in the middle of nowhere and I was trying to help this guy buy feet in the middle of nowhere. It's just, you know, it's just nice when you travel and you see other people that travel like you with a bike or by feet. There is this weird connection, you know, it's like everybody's trying to help each other. And in such a remote place, everybody is saying hello. You feel very welcomed, you know. There are very few people down there and they see tourists and, you know, they are always keen to help. So many people helped me on the way. Once I found a beer next to my tent, I was doing my business. And when I came back, there was a beer. Somebody, a complete stranger, just left a beer next to my tent. Some other people saw me on the street, gave me beer. I don't know. I look like I attract beer, apparently. Chocolate, you know, just trying to help. And it's a feeling that you get only with a bicycle, I think, in my opinion and in my experience.
Yeah, I think a lot of people that go to that part of Scotland, they always rave about how kind and welcoming the locals are. I'm interested, are there a lot of bike tours? Like, did you meet a lot of other cyclists, or was it kind of like, you know, you were a bit of a rarity?
There were other travelers with my setup, so with the panniers in the front and in the back. I think I saw 5 to 6 other people. The rest were just bike packing or just with the normal bicycle with the bed and breakfast, you know, pre-booked. So they basically have to go, you know, A to B in that day, no matter what. And that for me was, you know, not very appalling as a feeling. I just like to be free, you know, to choose what to do with my own day. And if I wanted to have a break, I just stopped, you know. There were quite a bit of cyclists, yeah. I think in the area of Inverness there were a lot of teams that were training there, so I don't think they were just doing the North Coast 500. The more north I was going, the fewer cyclists there were, definitely.
Now, a lot of people are worried about driving on small roads. I know, you know, an example, the Lake District is beautiful and it feels like it'd be great for bike touring, but with the small roads and the cars going fast, it actually can be a bit harrowing. What's it like on the North Coast 500? You know, a lot of the roads are single lane and there's lots of campers as well. How did you find that?
In some bits, I found it annoying a little bit on the climbs when you're going up and there is just one lane and you know, you got the camper van behind you, or in that hill in the cattle pass where it goes up. I remember it as a beautiful place, but with a very bad smell of burnt clutches from the car. It was just burning clutches. Yes, it was terrible because it was so steep that, you know, the car were just going fast, and then you got the cyclists like me with the panniers, and there is no space because it's very, very narrow, and they just have to stay behind you, and you just can hear that the clutch is just burning. So, you know, I think as a cyclist, you have the right of going, you know, if you stay on the left or on the right, depending on your country, and you're not doing crazy things, the car has to respect you. You are, you know, the weak one. You are the small one. There is no way a car has right over a bicycle, in my opinion, you know. In such a small road, in the countryside, you don't need to go fast. Just wait your time and pass the cyclist. Of course, there has been, you know, the usual drivers that weren't very polite and have passed very close to me. But, you know, at some points, I felt the danger of being in that place, in that condition. But if you're, you know, sticking with it, maybe wait until the car is passing. Stay on the left as much as you can. Honestly, I don't think that should be a reason not to travel.
You know, it's funny. Yeah, you mentioned the how steep the roads are, and I remember my first few trips driving around, you know, parts of the UK through England and Scotland, and I couldn't believe how steep some of these small country roads are. Where I remember going over Hardknott's Pass in the Lake District, and the car tires were squealing, not because I was going fast. It was so steep we couldn't get purchase, and I actually got a bit frightened. I'm like, you know, I think it's 22% grade there. I'm like, What's going to happen here? I got up and it was just, but you know, here in Canada, you never get anything like over like 7 or 8%. So it's not only hard to bike, but it's also like weird to drive. I'm interested, you know, obviously the route is beautiful almost throughout, but was there a stretch that you just were just, you know, amazed where, you know, you want to go back there and do it again? It was just so pretty.
Yes, absolutely. The stretch that goes basically from Applecross, Lochcarron, which is a very small and lovely town on the sea, on the west coast, which I think if you do the North Coast 500 clockwise, it's, you know, at the beginning of the trip, from there up to Durness. So basically all the west coast that goes up and the north coast as well has been absolutely stunning. You just pass from the sea with these crazy beautiful cliffs to lakes and lochs, how they call them up there, these lochs, which are this intense blue, and you know, they're just a constant of these beautiful mountains. Some of those had still snow on top, you know. It has been absolutely epic. The view was just staggering. I there are no words or pictures that can explain the feeling of just riding the Applecross Peninsula after the Bialaknaba Pass that goes, you know, inward and reach Gairloch, which is another town. That part and that which then go up to Durness, which is you know, on the coast, and there is a Cape Wrath up there, which is a cape where, you know, Vikings back in the time were coming to pillage, you know, the coast of Scotland, and they were just, you know, going there. And, you know, I reached that place and I thought it was so remote. And then I was reading then thousands of years ago, the Vikings were coming down there to pillage. You know, I come from the very south of Italy and close to Africa. For me, that is, you know, an hostile environment. There were people just living in there. So I cannot believe how somebody could live there during the winter. It's very remote. It kind of gave me the feeling of Finland and Lapland. I've been there a couple of years ago with a camper van, and it felt just so remote. Up there, it's much more vast. So it's much larger and bigger. You got a stretch of 300 kilometers of nothing. And in Scotland, it's much smaller, but with the bike, even that, it feels big, you know.
That just sounds incredible. And I've heard actually as well, other people say just that West Coast is so rugged and so empty. And, you know, if you get it on the right day and there's not a lot of other traffic, it feels like you just have this entire area to yourself, which is just spectacular. The scenery is well known. Is there other aspects that make the North Coast 500 really special beyond just these incredible views?
Food is amazing. Food is really good. I had the best haddock with cheese, which is basically fish and chips, of the Highlands. So it's not the usual cod. It is haddock, which is, in my opinion, much better fish and deep fried with that butter. After such a long day of biking, it feels like heaven. You know, you just get the fish and chips, you get all those beautiful carbs and that fish, and then just keeps you going for 3 to 4 more hours without, you know, the banana, which is not as nice as a fish and chips, you know?
Yeah, it's funny how just the simple meals, I have multiple things just like that. These simple meals that when you're, you know, shattered or bonking, and then you have that, it's like, you know, a 3-star Michelin restaurant is the best thing. You know, your whole body kind of sings after having that. What did you find the hardest part of the trip? Or was there a hard part for you?
I think the hard part physically is that the cattle pass, because it's really exhausting. And if you got the bike packed up and it's heavy, you have to pull up a mountain, you know, a bike with all the luggage. I had around 20 kilograms, the bike and the panniers and everything. So I was pushing my body and that bike up a hill, which was very steep. You know, at times you just feel miserable. You just, you know, want to give up. But, you know, you're there. You can only go up. There is no way you're going down. So it's, you know, you have to push it, make the break. And that was hard. I saw the statistic on the application I was using. And there is 1 kilometer of this road, which is the steepest part. And it's just nasty. And in order to make 1 kilometer, it took me 23 minutes, because I stopped so many times. I was just, you know, pushing a bit and then stopping, because I couldn't even push the bike with my hands. It was just so steep.
Oh, man. You know, you said something great there. Like, you didn't really have a choice. You have to go up. And I feel like there's almost something, as, you know, people that do these long distance trips, you know, their challenge comes and your only option is you can either stop the whole trip and turn around, or you push through. And there's probably some aspect in terms of mental fortitude or just learning to get through barriers that, you know, we get by doing these tough trips, because you're right, there's nothing you can do. You can take a break, you can walk, you know, there's all those things, but unless you want to give up, you know, you got to get over that hill.
The other hard part was coming down from WEC in the East Coast. It is this very long stretch. The highway is called the A9. And that was not super busy, because I rode it on a Sunday, but it was just, you know, straight and not very really scenic, as it was on the West Coast. So basically you end up having 160 kilometers of a road, which is basically full of lorries and motor vans, because, you know, everybody going from Inverness to John O'Groats or to WEC just goes from there. And I think on a busy day that can be not very nice. And after, you know, riding so many kilometers and seeing that beauty and then having to do 150 kilometers just because you have to go back, it hasn't been super fun. But I was glad, you know, that I just spent the whole day on the bike, ended up doing 140 kilometers in a day just because I wanted to get done with it. You know, that wasn't very nice, but, you know, it's part of it. And you're almost there. You just have to close, you know, the circle. So just have to go.
Was there a good shoulder there, or is it kind of like stressful because you have the lorries coming close by and it's like one of those, you're gripping your handlebars and like just, you know, feeling the lorries rush by and the wind gusts like push you around?
Yeah, that wasn't fun.
Oh, that sounds, those are always the toughest parts of the trip. 20 years from now, when you think back to this trip, what do you think your memory is going to be? Like, what's going to stick out as just, you know, what makes the North Coast 500 so special to bike around?
It's just again, it's so hard to describe by word. The scenery and the feeling you have on the West Coast when you just see, you know, the coast is that there are a lot of little peninsulas, you know, and it's, you know, not very regular. So from the right angle, you can see, you know, a little coast with the sea, and then behind you can see lakes and those beautiful mountains going into the sea. And again, I had the most beautiful days, with sunny days, amazing views. I could see I don't know, 20, 30 miles, you know, on my field of view. So I could see very island very far away because there are a lot of islands, you know, on the coast. So this and the blue intense of the sea is just unbelievable, really unbelievable. And some of those beaches with the, you know, turquoise water, it looked like Caribbean water. And you know, you can see the mountains full of sheep. So many sheep. I've been in a village which had the ratio of sheep to people. It was 25 to 1. For every person, there were 25 sheep in the village. So it was, yeah. So you just see so many sheep, and lambs were born. You know, it has been Easter recently, so there were a lot of lambs, beautiful cows as well. I've seen horses, I've seen reindeers, and I even saw an otter. So many little hawks. The kookaroo, the birds, you know, the one that goes cuckoo. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that I always heard it, you know, on the clock, you know, when the clock goes out. That was actually the real deal all night long. I still remember that, you know. And so many crows too, like the giant crows. So many animals. And I even saw a stag, you know, the male deer with a big... Yeah, it was so beautiful, and it was just staring at me and the wildlife and nature, basically. I will remember how wild and beautiful that country is.
You know, it's been great to hear of your experience. What really sticks with me is the idea of travel as freedom. And I think, you know, a lot of times we're, you know, trying to fit a trip into 5 days or 7 days, and so we have to plan everything. And your approach of, you know, part of the trip is just the discovery of not knowing when you're going to stop, not knowing what's around every corner. And I think that's a really exciting way for people to try traveling. You know, there's a time and a place when, yeah, you only have a week and you do have to try and fit it in. But if you can get the time and, you know, just have that exploration, it's just such an exhilarating way to travel. And I'm really glad you shared that today with us and just shared the highlights of this incredible route. So thanks a lot, Dan. I really appreciated having you on the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the 10 Adventures podcast. If you liked it, why not give us a review? Better yet, subscribe and get inspired again and again. Also, if you want to find your own adventures, why not check out 10adventures.com, where you can use our free resources to plan your own trip or book a tour in over 60 countries and make your own epic memories on your next adventure.